Welcome back to Canna Week, brought to you by New Frontier Data, where we deliver the week's top headlines in cannabis and hear experts weigh in on the impact these stories are having on the industry. I'm your host, Heather Wickline. Okay, today we are going to be discussing cannabis cultivation and exploring indoor grow solutions. And we have the pleasure of having two guests join us from TSR Grow. Our first guest is a veteran in the cannabis industry with 11 years of experience in LED lighting solutions and over 29 issued patents. He has a proven track record of product innovation and commercialization. Please welcome founder and president of TSR Grow, Mikhail Segal. Thanks for being here.
Oh, thanks for having us. We're excited to be here and talking to you. It's a pleasure.
Absolutely. And our next guest is a pioneer in master recipe distributed management solutions for the horticulture industry, owned and operated engineering and software companies for integrated process and manufacturing management. It's a mouthful. He certainly currently serves as VP of sales and marketing. Please welcome Gary Arnold. Thanks so much for your time.
Yeah, thank you. I'm looking forward to sharing some ideas with you. And this is a wonderful industry for sure. We're really enjoying it. Thank you very much.
Well, we are excited to be working with you. And last but not least is our in-house guest. He is New Frontier Data's Chief Knowledge Officer and leads our amazing research team. Please welcome Mr. John Caguia.
Delighted to be back, Heather. Thank you for having us.
Awesome. Well, Mikhail, before we get started, would you mind giving our listeners a quick rundown of TSR Grow for those who may not be familiar with your company?
Sure. Well, TSR Grow, when Gary and I co-founded the company, our goal was to really develop a solutions approach to cannabis cultivation and horticulture lighting that really was looking forward in the long-term and sustainable approach for commercial CEA agriculture that really differentiated and changed things up on how things were done. So that's been our approach, is to really develop advanced solutions for horticulture cultivation.
Amazing. Well, we have a lot to cover, so let's dive right in. GreenhouseGrower.com reported lessons all growers can learn from the cannabis gold rush. So the dramatic expansion of the legal cannabis industry in recent years has led to significant advances in the way cannabis can be grown. As a cash crop with high cost for downtime and a high return on investment for efficiency, the industry has a great deal to learn from commercial agriculture. So Mikhail, TSR Grow primarily focuses on indoor and greenhouse cultivation. What are some of the pros and cons of each?
Well, greenhouse growing is a pro if it's possible. It's really is a significant benefits because you have a lot of initial costs for are lower. The energy consumption and really the carbon footprint is much lower. You're using the sun in terms of growing a significant amount of your crop. Depending on where you are. You still have the need for supplemental lighting, and especially with a crop that utilizes so much energy, such as cannabis, you still have to supplement often. But just the benefits of being able to utilize the sun and take advantage of nature along with what you're doing, I think, is a huge benefit and a big pro.
Gary, what would you say are some of the cons?
Well, obviously, with the greenhouse, you're going to find weather is the key thing. So it's depending on what part of the country you're in, that's going to be, whether or not it's going to be a good investment for you. I think typically what we find is that the challenges are a little less yield because you can't control the environment as closely as an indoor grow. And I think the yield part of it is really the biggest thing that comes out of that as a con. You just can't get the same quality or yield across the country.
Got it. John, I know we've done some reporting on cultivation and sustainability and all that. Anything to add to what they mentioned?
No, actually, just building on both their points, which I think are dead on, is one of the things that any operator looking at this market right now must understand is how much variability there is geographically in the country. Now that so much of the country is in play, it was one thing when the industry was principally focused on the Western state markets where, there's a lot of outdoor cultivation happening, a lot of greenhouse cultivation happening, and to a lesser extent, indoor as it started moving westward to places like Colorado. But now that you have, you know, markets as far afield as Florida to Connecticut in play, there's a lot of kind of climate variability that you've got to take into account as you're thinking about what type of facility that you want to build. And, you know, the foundational trade-offs might look one way if you're looking at them in abstract. But you start dealing with real issues in terms of climate environment management or cultivation environment management when you're dealing with whether it's extreme temperatures or very, very heavy snowfall, the amount of rainfall or cloud cover, you know, that you have during the course of the year. These are all real considerations that you have to understand about the particular site that you're in. So, you know, there are broad principles about the general efficiencies that you gain from greenhouses being the best of both worlds, as Michal said. But you really need to apply that to the local context and where the facility is going to be located.
If I can, John and Heather, I'd, you know, just jump in. I agree with that wholeheartedly because we've seen a lot of greenhouses and especially early on, a lot of greenhouses from the West were installed in the Northeast where we have extremely high humidity conditions. And if you don't consider and take into account and really put in place environmental capability in terms of dehumidification and really managing the heat, then you truly can't take advantage of the greenhouses in the summer months. I mean, we've seen in some instances growers putting out the blackout curtains in the Northeast in August and September during the high humidity just so they could grow at night to be able to minimize the heat and the intake of temperature during the day. So it's definitely something to consider. And that's another reason why in cannabis, being able to do that, it's very important to make sure that you put in place enough lighting that isn't just meeting, that isn't just meeting your minimal supplemental effects, but you really want to have enough lighting so that you could grow with the lights out if you needed and truly maintain annual and year-round production. Even though you may not use it all the year round, you're really able to meet your year-round yield goals if you needed to grow at night or if you needed to extend the day and really focused on being able to fully supplement and truly grow indoor, but use the greenhouse when you can.
Well, that actually leads me to my last. How important is the sustainability and energy efficiency in cannabis cultivation?
I think it's huge. So cannabis, they say in Massachusetts, for example, one of the, they're looking at cannabis being, you know, upwards of 10, 15, maybe even, you know, approaching 20% of the energy that's going to be utilized from, you know, from the producers of energy. So when you have cannabis in a crop that's consuming that much energy, you need to start looking at sustainable practices in terms of how you're growing. It's just a huge energy consumer. So if you can do things that are, whether you're incorporating CHP, whether you're incorporating, battery storage or solar or other mechanisms or sun or greenhouses, but really being able to become sustainable considerations in what you're doing is going to be huge just because of the power consumption. And so, you know, when we looking at sustainable approaches and what we do, it's everything in what we do. And you know, it's part of our solution and our system in that we can, you know, being able to integrate all of these systems that go into a cannabis facility, they all have to be, it can't have a silo approach either. You have to have complete integration of all of those systems and being able to do that sustainably is key. But, you know, that's one of the things we looked at is being able to tie into solar, and have the whole power system. You have to be able to monitor it, tie into demand response, tie into cogen and, battery, and being able to do that and monitor and integrate. Those are all key facets and incredibly important for long-term sustainability of a cultivation facility.
Amazing. John, Gary, anything to add?
You know, actually, I'll just mention that one of the biggest challenges is to control the environment completely. So, you know, too many times people are putting in units by silo mentality, putting so many lights, so much, you know, HVAC, dehumidification, that needs to be tightly tied together. And that's one of the things that McCall and I spent a lot of time in with our company, is that how do we integrate all of the variables within the grow chamber itself so that we can properly optimize it. And optimize it means that we want to not necessarily drive things highest, but we want to make it the lowest cost of operation. That means we're going to use the least amount of energy to give the plants what they need to get their optimal results and growth. So that's very important, to start tying these things together. So it does a couple of things. Saves energy. It saves waste products and runoff and stuff like that. With your, if you're feeding more properly, then you're gonna change your waste composition going out into the drains, stuff like that, or you have to have a recapture. But you can get a closer profile, and we call a master recipe, that you can dial in and basically use the least amount of resources to get the most amount of product.
Amazing.
You know, it's so I'm so glad that you framed it that way, with energy as being one key dimension and essentially water as a core constituent in your recipe as a second, because I think that really cuts to the heart of sustainability as we're viewing this issue emerging in cannabis. On the one hand, you have particularly these jurisdictions in the northeast of the country which have very old grid systems. You know, they're systems aren't designed for the sort of energy loads that cannabis is going to take on. Places like Colorado, which were still under capacity in terms of their utilization, were able to absorb their the advent of kind of indoor cannabis cultivation because the systems were stable enough to do that. But in a lot of these better established East Coast markets, the grid's ability to take this new loads on is going to be an issue. So there's not just the benefit to the organization, to the cultivation facility in terms of lowering your cost by being efficient, but there's the additional benefit because this is going to be a real issue as the legal market starts to build capacity. And on the water side, we were just looking at some analysis on the drought that is currently affecting the Western states. And of the seven core adult use markets in the West, Arizona, Nevada, Colorado, Washington, Oregon, California, nearly 85% of them are of that territory is under, you know, either extreme or exceptional drought conditions. So water is going to be an absolutely critical kind of point of contention for the entire agricultural economy in those states. And it's going to have, you know, real implications for cannabis producers. And so the efficiency issue with water use, particularly in markets that are experiencing extreme drought conditions, and these are the largest cannabis producing markets in the country, is going to mean that the operators that are able to really dial in their water use, get that perfect recipe dialed in and dramatically lower how much runoff they're using, dramatically lower the water costs, not only have kind of the economic advantage of lowering their cost, but it becomes a true sustainability issue, a true viability issue in a market where access to water, I think, could potentially become very, very challenging over the next 5 to 10 years if these levels of drought are sustained.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, that's where another, you know, not that cogen is the perfect solution, but it's a very viable solution in terms of generating, because you do generate some water, you have heat, you have, you know, not that in some of the drought stricken areas you don't need heat, but you have, you know, you can start to really optimize what you're doing.
Could you talk a bit about what cogen means for our audience who may not be familiar with the term?
Well, we've cogen, you know, combined heat and power, but it's a cogeneration where you're basically taking a big engine or taking an engine, taking gas or buying gas and generating the energy that you need at your own site. So you basically become your own power generator. And through that engine or that power plant that you're producing, you now can, rather than buying energy off the grid, you're buying energy, you're buying gas, but you're generating the energy yourself locally. And by doing that, you can also start to take advantage of the byproducts of that generation. So you can start to look at if you need heat, you can reclaim the heat for, you know, in some of your boiler systems, you have water runoff. So you have, you can start to gain a lot of efficiencies in your systems by being able to utilize and maximize your resources that are available to you and that you're using to generate your energy. So you have all the other byproduct aspects of that. You also have much more efficient distribution of that power within your plant. For example, you know, in terms of being able to supply energy to your system, you don't, you're not going through, you know, through the whole grid. You can generate additional energy if you can put it into storage so that you can also then, you know, consume that battery storage and a demand response. Some facilities that we've seen don't have cogeneration to generate all of their power, but they generate enough power to supplement what they're purchasing and then also store enough energy so that when they have demand response or there's peak demand and that it becomes very expensive to pull it off the grid, they can actually take it out of battery storage and then they can, so that they're not affecting the grid or the demand that's out there and don't risk having, you know, rolling blackouts or other, other aspects happen. And that's another key factor or advantage of, not to, you know, to really bring in our system, but actually our lighting and our approach to solution is based on really the sustainable approach in that we have centralized power servers and we can actually take power in directly from 483 phase or high voltage DC or battery storage or solar. So we can actually integrate in and be tie into some of these systems. So it's, but CHP is you know, just that combined heat power and allows you to really become much more sustainable. You can also generate your own CO2, but there's still question out there whether or not you can clean that CO2 enough coming off the engine to really use it.
That's so interesting. Well, given the number of new states across the country that are activating new legal markets, what advice would you offer to a new commercial grower in these legal markets?
Have a plan. You've got to have a plan. What we have seen time and time again is that people are really not looking at the 3 or 4 or 5 years it takes to get into cultivation. And in addition to the regulations and the approvals and the presentations they have to give, building the business plan, a lot of times they'll build a plan, but they're not really looking at it in terms of what is going to be my total cost of operation. What's it going to cost me to produce a gram or a pound of product? And that's the thing that catches them because they look at the prices of cannabis today in a certain opening market or something, and it could be very attractive. But we all know that as soon as supply catches up with demand, then the cost of the product starts, you know, coming down and leveling off. And now all of a sudden, the cost of manufacturing that product ends up being the big difference between a successful company and a company that won't succeed, won't compete. So it's always starting with a plan first. And we spend a lot of time, even though we are in the selling a lot of the cultivation materials and stuff like that, we spend a lot of time with customers talking to them about their business goals, their business expectations, and then the reality of that in terms of are they going to be able to pull that off with the way they're doing it. One of the things that we found is that people will try to look at first cost when they invest in things. So they invest, whether it be HVAC, dehumidification, lighting, irrigation, fertigation systems, they'll try to get those down into the lowest cost all by themselves. And I opened up with the fact that this is an integrated system. All of these areas need to go together to really give you a unitized capability of not monitoring and controlling and adapting that controlled environment to your product. And the other part of that is your product is what? It's different strains of cannabis. The different strains will grow under different conditions. So if you've got a large room with one HVAC control system, which they all do, and you've got one lighting system, and you've got one irrigation system, then you're limited in terms of how much can you change any of those variables. And one of the things that we've built into our systems is that we can monitor all those variables, and we can use our lighting as a platform to adjust for the different variables, for the different strains and the different locations in the control room, in the grow room itself. So planning is really the key that people have to start and finish with.
And prepare for the unexpected. And it's going to, you know, take much longer than you think. But the other thing to plan and think and the real unexpected is really changing regulations and some of those things that are happening, and really be put in place a system and the capability to adapt, be flexible, because regulation is going to change. Power requirements are going to change. Massachusetts is a great example, or California coming online, but you know, Massachusetts, you have to replace all your HPS or have limited watts per square footage. And you can imagine that that's going to change again. So being flexible, being capable, and really being able to adapt to these changes is important.
John, anything to add as far as the regulatory changes that might be coming down the pike? That seems to be something that would be pretty huge in this industry.
One of the things we're curious about is what role that some of the effects of climate change that we're starting to see will play in the way resource management gets regulated, resource use gets regulated in the future. We are already expecting there to be very high costs for water in the Western states if the drought continues as it is. Whether it's, the fear of rolling blackouts, like, the places like New York have had over the past couple of years at the peak of summer, how one regulators end up enacting policies that constrain how much water or energy or other inputs cannabis cultivators might use. But also too, to Gary's point, how much kind of agility can you build into your system to make sure that if these changes come down the pike, you're not having to tear down your entire grow, that you've got enough modularity in there that it allows you to be flexible and agile. The two points around being aware of how the regulatory landscape is changing, and then two, planning for where the market is going, not where it currently is, I think are absolutely critical. To the point about how attractive prices look when the market first launches, in a market like Colorado, we've seen the wholesale price per pound, the average market rate, it's down about 45% from where the market launched. And at its lowest, it was down about 60%. So if you started in Colorado thinking that $3,000 a pound was going to be what you were going to be getting for the next 10 years, then by year two, you are already in trouble. And yes, it's plateaued out once the less efficient operators have been flushed out of the market. But it's critical to anticipate that the trends that have been seen in the established markets are going to be replayed in these new markets as they activate. And so there's some really rich lessons to be learned from the markets that are 6, 7, 8 years old now that have been through the crucible, and a lot of agility, a lot of lessons on agility to be learned from those who are still standing.
Well, in the theme of having a plan, looking ahead, how is innovation changing the way cannabis is grown? Like, what role is technology playing in increasing speed or improving quality and reducing risk in the cultivation environment?
That's where we stand out. We've really embraced technology as part of our architecture. And I think one of the biggest things we brought to the table is that we've taken the ballast of the power supply off the fixture head itself. And we've taken out of the grow room altogether and put it in a centralized area outside of the grow area. And what that does is that it immediately makes a positive impact on the environment in the grow room itself, because we removed a fair amount of heat out of the room. We can then have a smaller HVAC system. We can have a less operating cost for that HVAC system to maintain and control the balance of thermals in the room itself. All right. In addition, moving that out, we also take the ballast out of there. You look at a ballast can weigh between 10 and 20 pounds. People don't think about this, but if you've got a room with 100 or 500 or 1,000 fixtures, times 10 or 20, there's a lot of weight that's going into the structure. It'll either hang it off the ceiling or hang it off from racks, all right? So all of that weight has been taken out of the room and put into, we call it relay racks and stuff like that are built for that. The other part of that is that where we drive our fixtures now from this remote power system, then we can also regulate the intensity. So we don't need two wire dimming circuits. And you look at all of the other lighting that's out there on the market right now, every one of them, if they're going to regulate the intensity, it's going to be with a two wire dimming system. We eliminate that altogether. So this is part of the technology we're talking about. And so we can regulate that intensity through our power from our remote power service to the light heads themselves. And then if we looked at all of these attributes, it's just more capability that's built in there. And one further thing. So this ends up being like a lighting, we call lighting as a platform. We don't look at lighting as individual lights that people turn on and off. We look at it as a network. And that network is throughout the grow rooms and facilities, obviously. So we use that to also harness information. And we'll bring in information through the lighting and through the lighting system to do exactly what we started talking about initially, was to have a holistic view of all of the variables in the control room so that we can manage those variables with the lowest cost of operation. And we'll continue to push down on the energy consumption, we'll push down on the water usage, we'll push down on the nutrient to get the best product yield that you want for the different strains you have.
Technology really is important, because cannabis is a manual and an intensive operation. And to really be sustainable, you really need to have, GMP standards and they'll come into play in the medicinal and recreational cannabis. And information is critical to help measure, monitor, analyze, forecast. You have to be able to predict and know what you're doing and where you're going. And so technology is really critical, and that information to help generate and establish sustainable cultivation for a lot of, to be successful. And really for any viable operation, having full GMP standards and best manufacturing and, technology, and being able to repeat from cycle to cycle and take that data and start to have predictive analysis on what your crop is doing and whether it's a healthy crop, and know when to, when to pull out or replace or move on or change a strain or change out a grower, and really see what's happening in real time, and then have enough data so you can start to predict that and have repeatable results. And that's that's for the industry. It's just important, and information can help them do that.
Right, John. Anything to add?
Well, just, and this is not intended to be self-serving, but as a data junkie, one of the things that has been really exciting about the innovation that's being deeply integrated into the cultivation environment is the feedback loop it enables. So the idea that, 20 years ago, the best growers in the market just had an encyclopedic knowledge in their brains, but trying to get it out of them was nigh impossible. And now the idea that individual plants can give you feedback to the nutrient mix that they're receiving, to the amount of light that they're receiving, that allows you to adjust not only their inputs in real time, but also apply those lessons on a macro scale to ensure repeatability of results. One of the just underlying and foundational outcomes of that is the quality of cannabis improves, because the ability to ensure consistent replicable results becomes possible when you're using technology that has a lot of automation in it, and that has feedback loops that allow you to test results and optimize outcomes. So if we are, I think, transitioning out of a season where You know, you could, the same grower growing Blue Dream would have five different, you know, over 5 years would have five very different types of plants, to a period where even for flower, the ability to achieve, you know, nigh on kind of Coca-Cola level of consistency. We're not there yet, but we're getting there. And I think that's going to only improve the consumer's experience, but also enable some really novel innovations when we start thinking about marketing, branding, and product innovation in this industry.
And it's really going to help with sustainability as well. I mean, there's studies going on, and really a lot of things go in terms of visualization of the plants and being able to read, you know, in real time what the plant is doing, whether it's, you know, just like humans, it takes a nap. It doesn't just because you're giving it nutrients, it's not, you know, it may be full, it's not taking it all at that time. But if you can start to tie that and see that, you may not need the lights on, you know, from, you know, 9 to 9:15 because, you know, plant's taking a doze. So, but all of these things you can start to see in real time and affect not only the plant health, but what it's doing. And you can, if you can tie that into your real-time data, you can now start to save in the nutrients, you can start to save in energy and really grow in a healthy way. You know, the plants are healthier, they're going to respond better, they're going to yield better. And long-term, you're going to have, a much healthier crop. And when you're taking clones and cuttings and moms, you know, all of these, you want healthy moms. And so you want healthy plants, and data and technology is helping, I think, to create a better grow.
Just on that line of consistency and being able to become more sustainable. I recently had a conversation with an agronomist out of Purdue, who's been working on this idea of how to rethink the way cannabis plants are watered. And the difference between hand irrigation, which is where a lot of this industry started. You know, you basically have a guy walking around with a pipe that's filling the pots in the facility, to micro pulses of water that are, you know, at the plant root, and so rather than a consistent watering system, you're applying micro pulses of water to the soil. There's a system measuring the moisture density in the soil. And they found that they could reduce their water use by nearly 90% by using that approach relative to somebody who was walking around with a hose in hand. It's still early days in sort of that level of calibration, but I think an extraordinary indication of how much opportunity there remains for integration of technology into the grow space to really draw down or reduce our resource use while still growing, to Mikhail's point, really healthy, vibrant plants.
Yeah, I feel like this consistency across the entire industry is just showing how we're maturing as an industry, whether it's the, you know, consumer having an expectation of a certain product or the growers being able to have the consistency of the product that they're growing. Well, we are almost out of time, and I could talk to you guys forever because you are a wealth of information. But before we go, I'd love to go around the horn and kind of get your predictions, expectations for the rest of, or for the future, I guess, for the rest of 2021.
Well, I'd say that, it's a lot of momentum. Big things are happening. The industry really, you could say it was in its infancy several years ago or many years ago, but really truly advanced, indoor agriculture and where this is going is still in its infancy. And there is a lot of momentum. And just like with any industries and any technology gains, I think there's a lot of opportunity to bring technology and capability and agriculture know-how and just technology from other markets into this space. A lot of, you know, just like any industry, when people start, you know, everybody, there's a lot of reinventing the wheel, starting from scratch, doing things your own way. But there are a lot of technologies and capabilities that have gone into other industries, whether it's, you know, technologies and phones and cars and and automotive or other, that the underlying capacities and information and systems that are used just in production and information and from the medical space that can be brought in will really make big changes over the next, 5, 10, even 2 to 3 years. So there's going to be a lot of exciting advancements and exciting progress and a lot of growth.
I think we're already making some of those changes, Mikhail. Come on, don't hold back. But you know, one of the things that actually brought up is that people coming into this industry are coming from different industry backgrounds, and they're coming from pharmaceutical, they're coming from automotive, electronics companies. Guess what? They have a lot of technology background. They know how to use technology to their advantage to make, as we say, a consistent quality product. Because ultimately, what we're faced with in this industry is not just having one crop after another with all these variables around it. It's really having the same crop and the same result. And in order to do that, you've got to do a lot of things the same to make that happen. And that's going to be tightly monitored, tightly controlled. And I think the industry, because of the outside pressures coming in, will make that happen. And we know that with all the regulations that are going on across the country, sooner or later, probably within, I'm going to say, a couple of years, you're going to find deregulation of cannabis that's going to open up a whole new onslaught of manufacturing efficiency and cost models that will only be driven by automation. So it'll be sensor-based technology with intuitive algorithms to give you the competitive advantage, as we call it. And that's something, by the way, that we're not just thinking about. We're working on that now. We have installations on a lot of beta sites that are going in to prove a lot of that philosophy and some of the things that we have to learn. Because quite frankly, this is a business that everyone learns like every day. We've got hundreds and thousands of customers. No one's the same. They're all different. But we take all of those measurements, if you will, data points together, put them into the intelligent spot so that we can make adaptive decisions on the different variables we see. Then we're going to come up with that quality product and meet those GMP standards that Mikhail was mentioning. And again, you're going to see the pharmaceutical industry coming into this industry. What do they run by? They run by GMP. So those that are going to succeed and grow have to get on board with that kind of strategy.
I echo everything that Gary and Mikhail have said. And maybe my takeaway and thinking around this is this idea of we're entering a season or an era of sustainability as a business imperative in cannabis. I think the operators who've been in this market for the past 20 years, there's a few who've had the luxury of considering sustainability as an opportunity to perhaps differentiate themselves in a market. But right now, if you're in one of the Western states and you can reduce your water or your energy and your cooling costs by 20% by using technology to create, say, automated monitoring systems to water your plants more efficiently, that's not just kind of critical to your bottom line, but in an environment where there's just less water to go around, less usable electricity to go around, or much more higher cost electricity to go around. These questions around sustainability are no longer a luxury for those who have the time to pay attention to them. I think they're increasingly deeply tied to business performance. And the sooner that particularly new operators are able to integrate these principles deeply into their operations, I think the better positioned they'll be to compete in an increasingly changing climatic environment, but an increasingly competitive one as well.
Amazing. Well, thank you all so much for your time. And thank you to our listeners for joining us at Canna Week. Please be sure to like, subscribe, hit the notification bell. And if you really like us, give us 5 stars. And keep a lookout for our next big report being released next month. It's the Global Report. And we have the honor of having TSR Grow be one of our sponsors. I'm your host, Heather Wickline, and we will see you next time. New Frontier Data provides this podcast for entertainment purposes only. Nothing stated in this podcast should be taken as legal or financial advice. Reference to any specific product or entity does not constitute an endorsement or recommendation by the company. The views expressed by guests are their own, and their appearance on the program does not imply an endorsement of them or any entity they represent. Views and opinions expressed by New Frontier Data employees are those of the employees and do not necessarily reflect the view of the company or any of its officials. If you have any questions about this disclaimer, please contact our legal department.